from HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 303, recorded live Thursday, January 26th, 2012. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Kimberly Bryant about improving diversity in technology.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and today we've got Kimberly Bryant from Black Girls Code. Thank you, Kimberly, for taking the time to chat with me today.
Thank you, Scott, for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
No worries. So I usually talk about technology and programming languages, and haven't really talked too much about social issues around technology. I did have a couple of shows over the last 300, like I did Women in Technology in the Muslim World, and that was very interesting because we learned that what we thought was true wasn't true. And what I wanted to do is talk to you and understand why someone who is a programmer who's maybe listening to this show should care whether or not more Black girls code.
I think that's a fair question. I think the reason that someone in technology who's not a woman or not a person of color should care, because the field of customers that we serve in terms of who actually are the consumers of these products that we are developing from the IT side is a very diverse one. It's very female oriented, and it's also very demographically oriented to folks of color, and is very diverse. So I think the more unique and different perspectives that come to the table on the design side, the more effective and the more efficient the products that we deliver will be in terms of meeting the needs of the folks that we're building for. So I think it's even with empirical studies have been shown that teams that are more diverse are actually more efficient as well. So, you know, for all of those reasons, I think that we should care to make the environment and the working environment, the creative environment on the IT side, as diverse as possible.
That's interesting. Now, should the environment and the work environment reflect the environment of the public? I mean, right now in America, Black folks are about 14% of the population. Mm-hmm. So we're not looking to have teams be, half Black, half white, or, you know, some arbitrary amount of diversity. What is a reasonable amount of diversity, and is that amount the amount that it is available in the general public?
I think that from my perspective, now this is just my own personal perspective, I think that it absolutely should be reflective of the population in general. But I think we need to look beyond the population. Saying that, we need to look beyond the population within the continental U.S. because while folks of color are only 14% in the United States, that's not mm-hmm. the case if you look on a worldwide basis.
Right.
The world is much more diverse than that. And even here in the U.S., you know, it has been shown from the data that's been collected lately that within the next decade and a half, that those numbers will be much different than what they are now. So there will actually be much more of a diverse population than what we are seeing at the numbers currently today. That will be a lot of Hispanics that will make up that demographic. And I think when you look at Hispanics in IT, the numbers skew even worse than African Americans. So that is an issue. So one of the things we address in our program is not just girls of African American descent, but also girls that are Latino, Native American as well, because those are also groups that are currently underrepresented in IT.
Do you think that the problem of homogeny within technology started 20, 30, 40 years ago, and this is an issue of education and availability of technology?
I do. I absolutely do. And even if you look from a female perspective, I just recently did a presentation that showed back many, many years ago, like during the 30s and 40s, there were many women that were working on some of the very first installations and installments and working on a lot of the supercomputers, but that number started to change drastically from the 60s and 70s. And in the 80s, we had a bit of a peak. That was during my time when I was in college as far as women. Still not so much as far as African Americans and minorities, but we had a bit of a peak in CS enrollments in college at around the mid-80s, and then a drastic drop. So it has been sort of a roller coaster ride, but I think in terms of when we went into the Web 2.0 era and even before that, the numbers and the domination of males in the industry really started to push a lot of the females out of the field. Mm-hmm. And African Americans and folks of color never even really got a foothold into the field. So it's a double entendre when you're a person of color and also a woman in this field. There are just not many folks, trailblazers before us or even those that are there now for us to pattern ourselves after.
Yeah, there definitely were some very significant women in computers in the 60s and 70s, and that kind of did take a little bit of a dive there. I mean, initially you had like Grace Hopper who developed COBOL, you know. That is interesting that things that happened during the late 60s and 70s kind of changed the environment, changed the structure of where people went to school, changed things that were available to them. To speak specifically about the programs that are available, like, for example, in Atlanta, there's three historically black colleges in Atlanta, but only one has a computer science department. For something like that, aren't they to blame? Aren't the historically black colleges to blame for that? They should have a computer science department. They should be making sure that those programs are available to people.
I would agree, but I don't think that, you know, coming from a traditional engineering background myself, I just think that as a person of color, I think you have to look a little deeper. So African Americans in this country have always been positioned for to be successful in society. You either go one of three routes. You either become a doctor, you become a lawyer, or really that's really the path for most folks coming out of the era of the civil rights movement, et cetera. We were doctors, lawyers, or teachers, educators. And that was the path to success. So there really wasn't a clear indication for us to go in a technology field. There were some, but not a lot. So that's always been the thing. And for as far as African Americans in our culture, the symbol of success is becoming the one person that becomes the lawyer, the doctor, or even the educator beforehand. Mm-hmm. And now so much has changed in our society that kids actually look at more the folks on the entertainment and sports side as those people who pattern themselves after. So our colleges, our African, historically black colleges, actually were kind of raised and born in that era, and that is what they cater to, the liberal arts education. You know, the doctors, the lawyers, and the educators, that's who they train. So, yes, they could probably do more to address the STEM careers that really we need to focus on now, but you kind of need to look a little bit deeper into historical context of why it is what it is now in many of our HBCUs. And there are some that have programs in CS, but they're not a lot. But I don't think that's any different when you look overall at the college and the colleges in the U.S. as a whole. There's a huge skew towards liberal arts education, which does need to change for us to move, you know, the country in the direction we need to go.
So a couple of acronyms just for the listeners who may not be familiar with them. STEM is a word that you keep saying, science, technology, engineering, and math. Mm-hmm. And then HBCU, historically black colleges and universities.
Correct.
So when we talk about STEM and the push towards STEM, we're talking about making sure that everyone has the opportunity to have a science, technology, engineering, and math classes available, programs available to them. Why are those programs not available in as much in places where black folks go to school at the elementary and the high school level?
I think it's the demand. So there's not been a huge demand on one hand from students at some of the HBCUs to go into these fields of study, which needs to change. So when I was going to college or selecting colleges myself, I did look at HBCUs, and I guess the most prominent one would have been Howard University, which did have a robust engineering program, but not a lot of the HBCUs did. So I ended up going to a college that was not an HBCU because I really wanted to get a strong foundation in engineering. But I was a handful of black students that, you know, entered the freshman class as an engineer. So the demand is not and has not really been there on a heavy emphasis and focus for STEM careers for students of color. And that starts even before they're getting ready to look into high school, which is why, you know, in my program, I really start working with girls much earlier than high school even. We start in elementary and middle school, because that's when your focus really starts to frame itself around what you are interested in and what things you may choose once you go to college. So we have to get students of color interested in STEM careers and CS way before they are ready to select a college. And I think once that demand is there, we will see more colleges that are really catering to that student demographic.
See, I think that gets getting back to the children. I think moving away from the discussion about colleges and university, you're saying that demand's not there. The demand is likely not there because the young people who have grown up to be in their 20s don't have the context or the interest, and they look at these careers and they say, "Yeah, that's for nerds. That's you know, it's a bunch of white men that are, you know, doing their computer science thing, but that's just not for me." And like you said, that the HBCUs that are kind of born out of the civil rights era are set up for liberal arts, for making doctors and lawyers, for making social people interested in social change, making educators. But the idea that I could be an engineer and build something and make change that way isn't indoctrinated into the kids at a really, really early age.
Absolutely.
At what age do you think young black girls or just young people of color decide that programming's for nerds and they just give up? They switch it off in their mind?
I believe absolutely starts for girls, at least, in middle school. I don't know if I would necessarily change that for children of color, but for girls in general, it definitely is middle school. That's key. So that's why one of the focuses of our program is to really have lots of programs that really attach girls during that phase of middle school where they're in a transition. And if you look at even the statistics in math and science, girls track head-to-head with boys until about middle school, and that's when you start to see differences in the achievement levels. And I think that's for a number of reasons. But I know myself as a young person that, you know, went through the same transition, that's about the time where you're not really sure. There's a lot of social issues that you're going through that development stage. And if girls then are not given that encouragement and support that they can actually do some of this more technical work and it's not something that's not cool, then they won't. They opt out. So once that drop starts to happen in middle school, it's very rare to see girls to continue and then pick back up into the science and math and technical fields into high school. You have to address it in middle school because that's when they start to build those connections in terms of what makes sense for them and where they fit in.
Right. And they need to have a healthy sense of self-esteem just about
Absolutely.
Themselves. Not necessarily about themselves as women or about themselves as people of color, but they just simply as a person wandering around in America, they need to know that they're okay and what they choose to do and look like and feel like and work on is okay.
Right.
And that brings up an interesting question. We had a comment on Google Plus and a couple comments on Twitter, and someone made the comment that it isn't just people of color. There are, and this was the gentleman's term, redneck schools where computer science isn't cool either. I mean, a poor white school is not necessarily going to promote engineering as a way out as well. So this idea that the social fabric within which the students operate may not be set up to allow them to go and have these pursuits without being teased and constantly berated. And at the age of 9, 10, 11, it's really difficult to tell your friends, I'm interested in robots and
mm-hmm.
putting together computer programs. And at some point, you're just going to eventually give up.
True.
No matter what color you are.
True. I think that's true, but I think the difference is that there, you need to see yourself. So you need to see a reflection of yourself to really build that self-confidence in terms of, you know, what your life path will be and what type of road that you want to take. That's mm-hmm. just what it is. You need to see a reflection of yourself. And I think oftentimes children of color, you know, boys and girls, they don't see that when it comes to technology. There's not that Bill Gates. There's not the Mark Zuckerberg that looks like me, came from a similar background as me, and gives me that extra bit of self-confidence that I need to know that even though my friends are going to the basketball court and I want to sit here and build this website, that it's okay, you know, and I could do that. And I think that that makes a huge difference. So, yeah, I would agree that in general, overall, the geek culture is not that, I guess, appealing to a middle school kid, even if mm-hmm. it was from a redneck environment. But at least that kid can possibly go and find a reflection of themselves to give them that motivation to continue on the path and actually do more to connect with someone that could actually be a mentor to them. And our kids don't have that. And that, I think that's the biggest issue that makes it much more relevant and an impact to them in terms of where they go in technology.
I think that's really well said. I think that growing up and raising my sons who are mixed, that while the average white person might not say, we have a mixed president now, that's great, you know, progress. It cannot be overstated that just the simple existence of a person in power that happens to look like a young person, mm-hmm. how that changes a young person's perspective. I mean, I've got 3-year-old and 5-year-old that are growing up in a world where, you know, there are a couple of world leaders that happen to look like them, and that's going to be a given. And while, you know, again, someone might say, oh, you know, whatever, why are you putting so much onus on that? Why is that such a big deal? But the idea that Obama and other world leaders of color are in the public consciousness will mean that a 9-year-old version of my son will go, yeah, I could be president. I could totally do that, right? There, mm-hmm. we've had, you know, that just is a given. So I like the idea of really exposing kids to people who look like them early on. I assume that, you know, if I show up at a young school full of young black girls and try to teach them, that might be of value, but it's not nearly as of much value if someone shows up that happens to look like them and came from their neighborhood and came up the way that they came up.
Absolutely. I think for our program, one of the things that's been a huge benefit is that we had a tremendous outpouring of folks that stepped in to be volunteers. Most of them, I would say 99.9% of them, were software engineers or either designers in the Valley, in the Bay Area, and I would say over 90% of them were women. Not that we put out anything that, oh, we only want women volunteers, but women volunteers overwhelmingly came and volunteered their time in our program, and that was huge because that allowed, you know, our girls to work side by side, you know, 6 weeks at a time with a female engineer, which is something in most of their neighborhoods they won't see every day. So, you know, even that little bit beyond the tool that we were teaching, that's huge because that plants a seed that although I may want to be an actress or I may want to be a police officer or may want to be a lawyer, I actually could have this career over here as a software engineer as an option because, oh, I met this person during this class and this person was cool and I like that. So we just want to plant those seeds so there are options, so the girls see options for themselves where they may not have seen them before.
Exactly, exactly. I had an interesting question on Twitter from a white gentleman in the UK who said, well, I don't understand why you're trying to artificially change kind of the way that things have naturally turned out. Why do we want to kind of stack the deck in one direction? But then an interesting comment on Google Plus came in from Lachelle Hatley from Uplift DC. And she's an African-American computer scientist and engineer who works in a similar program that makes sure that kids are exposed. And she points out, and I like this, that the word exposure is so fundamental. You're not necessarily trying to stack the deck or give anyone an opportunity that anyone else didn't get. You are simply trying to expose kids because with exposure, students get interest. If they don't get exposed, they don't even know the topic exists.
Absolutely. And that is the key word right there, the exposure. And that's spot on. Because when we started our pilot program in 2011, we actually went to community centers and the Baby Hunters Fund in San Francisco. We talked to some of the guidance counselors and principals at the middle schools. And we had girls and their parents come in and have an introduction to the program. Most of the girls did not know what computer science was. They did not know what computer programming was. They had no clue. Maybe one or two girls out of the whole program had even done anything similar before. So a lot of the girls I had to kind of convince, well, you know, you should come to the class, try it out, it'll be fun. They didn't know. They didn't have a clue. But at the end of the six-week session, we had all these girls interested and had already created things of their own in this program called Scratch, and that just plants a seed. So I may or may not be able to birth a Mark Zuckerberg out of this class, but maybe I will. But the point is not even that. That's not the goal. The goal is just like I said and just what Lachelle said. We want to expose kids to opportunities where they may not necessarily see them. I think we take it for granted living in the Bay Area. We're surrounded by technology. We're surrounded by innovation. But most of the kids from the inner city do not have a clue that it exists when it's right in their backyard. So that's the point of the program, to really give kids an opportunity to be exposed to a field of study that they may not even know that they have an interest in until we show it to them.
So you bring up an interesting point, the idea that technology is all around us and what we take for granted. But it's interesting and I think useful to point out that Black people, at least in America, use social media more often, arguably more effectively than white folks. Black people dominate Twitter. Black people are using smartphones much more than white people. These statistics are all kind of not in dispute. An interesting question from a young lady on Twitter says, has the proliferation of smartphones and the idea that almost everyone has a computer in their pocket, they just don't know it's a computer, has that proliferation of smartphones resulted in more girls being interested? The idea that I can make something and put it on this device that I carry around with me all day long?
Unfortunately, I would have to say no. Because even though we as African Americans and even some of the girls and students are heavy users of technology, we're heavy consumers of it, they don't understand yet, which is the purpose of the program again, that there's something beneath just the use. So there's something beneath Facebook that actually makes it Facebook. There's something beneath my Android phone that actually I can actually create an application and not just download one from the store, the app store. They don't understand the piece that's beyond that. So that, even though they're using technology heavily, they don't understand the other side of it about the creation and how they can be a builder using this technology. So that's the point, to actually show them, to get them to kind of pull back the top layer and look beneath.
That's a really, it sounds, as an adult hearing that, you kind of say, how can they not know that? But my 6-year-old, we said, eat your chicken. And he says, chicken? What chicken? This is meat. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly, just he clicks, and then you can almost see his entire world explode, and suddenly the entire kind of like inventory chain from chicken to on your plate just poofed in his head. And he said, wait a second, chickens turn into food. And then, oh my goodness. So we took him to a farm and explained the whole process. But from his point of view, hey, meat magically shows up on my plate.
Mm-hmm.
And then his eyes were opened. What seems like an obvious thing. Where do these things come from? The same thing applies to smartphones. I downloaded it from the App Store. That's it's just meat. Wait a second. Where did it come from? I have no idea. You mean a person built a business around this? It is exposure, isn't it? You've got to let them know where these things come from. Take
Absolutely.
Them to factories. Take them to software companies. Bring your girls to work day and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
Interesting, interesting. And are you doing like mentorship? Your program, how is this is structured right now? Is there a mentorship component? Do you find kids that you look like this one's going to really be somebody, and you pull them aside and assign them a mentor from the community directly? Or how's the program structured?
We actually don't do that. We really want the program to be as open and accessible as possible. So we do have an application process when we have our programs, when we have our sessions. And we advertise that. We actually do community outreach to community organizations. And we really try to tap into girls that might even just have a little bit of interest in technology and take it from there. But we do have a mentorship from the standpoint of having very engaged TAs and mentors that come in during the sessions to work with the girls on the programs and the lesson plans that they're working on. And we also try to make sure that the program is built to be sustainable, not just for the organization, but also for the girls. So we want to take girls from having no knowledge of computer programming at all and really see them continue to grow in the program, to continue to come and take additional classes. So it's not a one-shot deal where they come to one class and we don't see them again. We're really trying to build relationships with the girls and keep them involved and engaged in terms of other activities. So we're going, some of the girls are going to a Hack the Future hackathon for kids here in the Bay Area at the San Jose Tech Museum this Saturday. It's not sponsored by Black Girls Code, but we are organizing a trip for some of the girls to go to that because we want to keep them engaged with technology even when they're not in our program. That is the same goal of our collaboration with Rocket 21, to really have a portal for our girls to engage with other professionals in the tech field or in other fields that they may be interested in, so that we continually fuel them and kind of seed them with information on technology, information on careers that can help them grow.
How much has open source and the proliferation of free software and the ability to make things for free? Like you mentioned Squeak, and there's all sorts of, you know, every vendor from, you know, Google, Microsoft, Apple all has free things that you can download. And there's lots of open source projects where someone could download what they need to make a piece of software. And the fact that that is like now more than ever free, has that helped at all?
Absolutely.
You expose them to these free tools and send them home?
Yes, and yes. That is huge. You know, most of our kids, so I think one of the challenges that we have with our program is that we actually do really target kids that are from the demographic areas and underrepresented areas and the urban areas where they may not necessarily have access to these tools at home. They may not have access to broadband. They may not actually have access to computer equipment to do these things. But if they do, and it definitely when they come to the class, being able to, you know, use free tool, open source tools like Scratch, tools like Alice, there's just so much available now. That's key to us being able to really get them to continually tweak and play around with technology. That's key, because if we didn't have that open source ability, we would not be able to reach the kids that we need to.
Now, whenever anyone talks about race, there's always the dancing around about stereotypes. So certainly any generalizations that I may say or not say are just that, generalizations. But amongst other people of color, like Asians, South Asians, Indians, there's a lot of support from the parents. No one is surprised to see another Indian software engineer or another Asian software engineer. And one could argue that culturally engineering is really promoted within those cultures, but also that the parents are deeply involved and being an engineer is almost as exciting as being a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get the parents involved to the point where they realize that hey, you know, a web startup could be a reasonable career for my young daughter or son?
One of the things that we noticed during our program and during our pilot last year was that our parents were very concerned as well as very interested in what their daughters were doing, you know, during that 2.5 hours on each Saturday. So we actually had opportunities for, during the class session, for parents to come in and the girls to present. So it was actually an opportunity for the girls to learn and develop their self-confidence in public speaking and being able to present their work, and also an opportunity for parents to see what their girls were doing in class and what they were learning. And they were very open to that. We also had a career day during the middle of our last workshop where we invited professionals to come in and speak to the girls about their careers and technology and give a career presentation. And we also invited the parents to that. So we want the parents to see that this is a path. So as much for us, it's about educating our parents because they normally are not in the technology field or have any insight to it as well, as much as educating the kids. So that has been part of, I think, helping us to have really good attendance in terms of our classes, so the parents see the value of having their girls come to this class on Saturdays and learn a key skill that can help them in the future. So our parents have been very engaged, and that's been helpful. So I think it's again, goes back to the issue of exposure. It has not traditionally been technology or even engineering, for that matter, been a career path that most African Americans and folks of color from the U.S. So if you're talking about transcontinental, totally different story. But in the U.S., most people of African descent, that has not, engineering has not traditionally been a path that we've grown to know to push our kids into. So exposing the parents to those opportunities and seeing what it could do for their kids is as much as important to exposing the kids for us. And once we do that, I have not had one single issue with having our parents continue to support, bring their girls out to classes, bring their girls out to events like this on Saturday at all.
Very cool. So people can learn more about Black Girls Code at blackgirlscode.com. You can donate. There's a donate button right there. You can get involved. And I assume that you would probably encourage people to get involved with whatever their community is, not necessarily black girls, but maybe, you know, Latino guys or whatever group the audience is involved in. Go to schools, get involved. I assume that there are programs like this in virtually every city for every kind of person that is underrepresented within science and technology.
You would be surprised. There are actually not as many as there should be. Not at all. So that was one of the driving reasons for me to create Black Girls Code. There definitely is not another program that specifically targets girls of color in this way. But there are some other programs that are more targeted to girls. There are some more that are targeted to just kids of color, some Latino kids, but they're not enough. So I would encourage folks to get involved and whatever programs that they can, and even creating things in their own neighborhoods and in their own communities around their expertise to really expose kids to this field and to the options that they have in the field of technology.
Well, I think that you said it correctly, and you said it very well, and you said there aren't enough of these programs, certainly not as many as folks deserve. So I encourage people who are listening to get involved. You can check out Black Girls Code. We also mentioned Uplift DC. There's other programs like Robotics in DC and Youth App Lab, and we'll try to put as many links to those in the show notes as we can. And thank you so much, Kimberly, for chatting with me today.
Thank you, Scott. I appreciate it. And just one last thing. We have a new class that's coming up in collaboration with a company here in the Bay Area called ThoughtWorks, which starts the second week of February, and we'll be doing a national video STEM game challenge. So definitely, if folks are interested, please take a look at that.
All right, and you'll send me all that, and I'll put that in the show notes, so we'll be sure to have links to everything.
Definitely. Thank you.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes. We'll see you again next week.